This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think that the most important thing is we realize that Food for Soul was not only a platform and a refettorio to be able to give a meal to someone in need, but also a teaching platform for people to understand how to cook better at home and waste less food.
As millions of American families gather this week for their Thanksgiving feasts, we thought we'd take a peek behind the curtain at one of the world's most celebrated restaurants, while at the same time discussing food waste and insecurity. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to Lara Gilmore, who along with her husband, chef and restaurateur Massimo Bottura, run the world-renowned Austria Francescana in Modena, Italy. In addition to running a 3-star Michelin restaurant, ranked the top restaurant in the world by Restaurant Magazine in 2016 and 2018, Bottura and Gilmore have created a unique template for feeding the needy through their nonprofit Food for Soul. Based on the concept of the Italian refettorio, a place where monks gathered together to share their meals, Food for Soul has elevated the soup kitchen to a whole new level, cooking and serving delicious meals in warm, elegant environments. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my friend Lara Gilmore. She is the co-founder and president of Food for Soul, and she's a partner in life and business with restaurateur Massimo Bottura. Their flagship restaurant is Osteria Francescana, one of the finest restaurants in the world in Modena, Italy. Lara, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, how are you, Alex?
It's so good to have you on. This is a real treat. I only wish we could eat some of your delicious food together. Lara is right now in your new restaurant with a lot of Ferrari artwork behind you. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, I'm in Maranello, which is a town that is about 20-minute drive from Modena. We're in the Emilia-Romagna area of Italy, which is northern and central Italy. And in Maranello, there is one thing and one thing only, and that is Ferrari. Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari, moved his company from Modena to Maranello when he bought land here in 1943. And on this piece of land, which he then created all his factories and the whole beautiful Ferrari car business, there was a farmhouse. And he decided that that farmhouse was not going to be torn down, but it was going to become the Ferrari canteen for all the new workers who were coming to his business. And then in the 1950s, the canteen was such a success, it got turned into a restaurant for the public. And from the 1950s on, it's been a roaring place to celebrate Italian and Emilian food culture, Lambrusco on ice, and also car culture. So when Massimo and I talk about Modena, we often describe it as the place of slow food and fast cars. Slow food being Parmigiano Reggiano, a cheese that needs to be aged for at least 24 months for it to be officially sold as Parmigiano Reggiano, or prosciutto, or any of the salumi that have their aging process as well, all the way up to aceto balsamico, which really doesn't get put in a bottle until it's about 20 years old. So that's the slow food. And then on the other side, we're in the land of Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, you know, incredible car companies that began at the turn of the century and have been innovative in Italy and engineering. Cavallino opened this summer, and it's a place to celebrate the slow food and the fast cars that defines this region.
So I want to learn more about Food for Soul, but first...
Are you hungry yet?
I actually have not even had my breakfast. Yes, hearing about salumis and aged cheese and vinegar is definitely whetting my appetite. But tell our listeners a little bit about your story of coming to Italy and falling in love and becoming a restaurateur extraordinaire.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to make a long story very short. When I did move to New York, I was a struggling artist and struggling to find any job at an art magazine. And I worked for a magazine called Aperture, which is a photography magazine. And of course, you know, the salary was what it was. And I had to find a job on the side just to be able to pay my rent in my little East Village apartment, which was so small you couldn't even close the door of the bathroom. I walked into a little cafe on the corner of Grand and Mercer called Cafe di Nonna. And this is 1993. And it was run by a third generation Calabrian who was looking for someone to be behind the bar, who knew how to make a cappuccino, who could talk about wine, who could talk about Italy. And I had that vocabulary, and I had that language, and I knew about Italy, and I could speak it, and I could tell stories of my trips I had taken since I, you know, started studying Italian back in 1985. And in walked my husband pretty much the day I started working, and he was taking a sabbatical year from his restaurant in Modena that he had opened 9 years earlier, back in 1986. And we met and we spoke, and he told me that my cappuccinos were terrible every day, but he helped me make them better. And we joked around in Italian, and somehow that place became a place to make new friends and create a whole new community around Italian culture and life. And somehow in between that, we fell in love, and he convinced me to move to Modena when he had to move back to Modena himself. And so I've been in Modena ever since.
And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, not only because I can almost taste the delicious food that you and your husband present to people from all over the world, is that you have a different perspective about food than a lot of fine restaurants would. I mean, it's pretty all-consuming to try to get one Michelin star, as you mentioned, and now you're three Michelin stars and routinely ranked the number one or two best restaurant in the world. But you were able to find the time to carve out this nonprofit, Food for Soul. When we think of the sumptuousness of Austria Francescana, the other end of the spectrum is food scarcity, and you and your husband did not turn a blind eye to that reality. Why don't you explain the mission of your organization?
I will, Alex. I just want to take one step back and mention that, like anything, we can always find time for anything in our lives. We fit in time. But it, more important, I think, was for us that we discovered this calling and this mission through our process. So the 17 years that it took from when we opened our restaurant in 1995 to when we were able to be awarded those three Michelin stars in 2012, our whole obsession during those 17 years was about quality, was about small producers, was about communicating, you know, the beauty of Italy and its stories through food. But we were completely focused on getting our Michelin stars. And once we got those stars, something so interesting happened. We realized that those stars really only had value because they had given us a voice, and that people were listening to us. And whether we were talking about a heroic farmer or butcher or cheese producer, we were making a difference. And 6 months into our three Michelin stars, there was an earthquake here in Emilia-Romagna, May 2012. And in May 2012, I'm not going to say it damaged our business as a restaurant. It damaged the town economically, tourism, Emilia-Romagna. But more than anything, within days of the first earthquake, we found out that 450,000 wheels of Parmigiano-Reggiano had been destroyed. They had literally fallen off the shelves because of this earthquake. And at that moment, Massimo and I looked at each other and we said, this is an opportunity for us to use our voice, to use these three Michelin stars, to use our culinary skills, to use the quality of our ideas to create something that will create more awareness about this problem and to help these cheesemakers survive, to communicate that anywhere from around the world, if you buy Parmesan cheese in this moment, you are supporting an industry that is in great difficulty. And so we did this through creating a recipe which Massimo took classic spaghetti cacio e pepe, and he transformed it into a risotto cacio e pepe. And instead of using pecorino cheese, he used parmigiano, and he shared this recipe virtually with Slow Food and basically communicated this message. And the reaction was incredible, and no dairy farmer closed, and no cheesemaker had to, you know, shut its doors. And we realized that a recipe can be a social gesture and can be an act of solidarity. And from that moment on, we started looking at the world from a different point of view and started realizing that we could have a great impact of things that happened outside our restaurant, not only inside our restaurant. And so when Expo came along in 2015, and the theme was Feed the Planet, Energy for Life, and lots of people were asking Massimo for a pop-up restaurant or to do some special dinner or this or that, and no one was asking him what he thought or what his ideas were about this theme, he realized that he needed to do something and act on his own accord. And that's when we started this project, and this little seed of an idea was planted.
Femmina, tu sei una malla femmina. Chi sto che fatte chiangere, lacrime infame da. Femmina, se tu peggio n'avevra, mentre se cade l'anima, non posso più cambiare. Femmina, si dolce come zucchero.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Laura Gilmore. She is a partner in life and business with Massimo Battura, their restaurants Austria Francescana, among others, and she's the co-founder and president of Food for Soul. So what exactly is the idea behind the refettorio concept? Why don't you break that down for our listeners?
Sure. So instead of doing an intervention in 2015 in a, you know, expo fair, Massimo wanted to leave a signature, a mark behind that had a little bit more lasting presence. And so he wanted to open up a soup kitchen, a community kitchen, with the inevitable waste that was going to be produced because of a fair like Expo, and the waste that we have in all of our cities coming out of supermarket surplus. And he wanted to do this with the chefs that were passing through from Expo, chefs from all over the world. And the place that he would do this was in a refettorio. A refettorio is where monks would gather at the end of the day to have their meal together, and they would commune, and they would commune over breaking bread. Refettorio is an idea of a place where you are safe, where you can share what you've learned over the day or the difficulties you've had, and you share it at the table with other people. And that meal is not just nourishing, because you need your calories and your energy to be brought back, but it's nourishing because you break bread together. And so we based this soup kitchen on an idea that a soup kitchen should be a place where people can come that's safe and beautiful and inspiring, and have a meal together and be served a meal. They don't have to stand in line. They don't have to be at a self-service. And that those meals could be created during Expo by visiting chefs who are cooking surplus food that would come in from Expo or from supermarkets, surplus. Every day we wouldn't know what kind of food we would have in or who the chef would be, but the idea was to create a three-course meal for people in need. And we immediately started working with an Italian association called Caritas Ambrosiano, the Caritas based in Milan. We found an incredible space that was a theater from the 1920s in adjacent to a 15th century church, in a neighborhood just outside the periphery of Milan that was kind of surrounded by train tracks, and it seemed to represent, you know, lives passing and going. And it was a neighborhood that was a little bit neglected, a lot of immigrants, a lot of poverty. And in the beginning, this neighborhood did not want absolutely a soup kitchen there. But by the end of 6 months, when we had been running this program, it was the volunteers and it was the neighborhood and the community around this project that actually convinced us that this small refettorio had legs and could become a model for future projects to come. And that's when we founded Food for Soul.
And it seems like so much of the concept is rooted in dignity for the needy, something that often gets overlooked when we think about lending helping hand to our brothers and sisters. The idea of being served is key there, I think. Up until Food for Soul was founded, what were the standard models for feeding the hungry in Italy?
When Massimo came up with this idea, I was totally terrorized by the idea that we were going to go and start a project that we really knew nothing about. It was not our world. I felt like, you know, a soup kitchen was so far away from what we were doing at Osteria Francescana. And all we knew was Osteria Francescana. But then we realized that all we needed to do was apply our most important pillars that built Osteria Francescana over those 20 years. And that if we applied those to a model of a soup kitchen, maybe that soup kitchen could be as beautiful and successful and as happy a place as Osteria Francescana. And so those three pillars really are the power of beauty, the value of hospitality, and the quality of ideas. And they sound very abstract, but we've always given ourselves over to how much power beauty has to communicate simple messages. It's a landscape for ideas in Francescana, whether we have a painting on a wall or a photograph. It helps give clues to what we're doing at our restaurant. And why couldn't that power of beauty also be applied to a soup kitchen? What does hospitality mean? Hospitality is more than 50% of who you are as a restaurant. It's 60%. You know, if you're treated with respect in a restaurant and welcomed into a restaurant and served in a way that makes you feel part of something, that's a restaurant you want to go back to, even if your meal wasn't so great. And so hospitality is welcoming into an Italian way of living, an Italian way of greeting people and respecting them from wherever they come from. It's not if your plate is served perfectly synchronized and everyone's plate goes on the table at the same time. It's about the smile on someone's face. It's about their body gestures, their attitude, how they tell stories. It's so much more. And then the third thing is the quality of ideas, which is really the idea that Osteria Francescana became what it was because of chefs working together and creating dishes and building on stories and centuries of culinary heritage and trying to pull that forward. And those same chefs could apply those ideas to food that was going to be wasted. You know, how can we salvage this food? How can we take ingredients that are about to be expired or are ugly so supermarkets are not going to have them on their shelves anymore, that are imperfect, but that are perfectly edible, and transform them into something unwanted and ugly, into something absolutely healthy and delicious for someone who needs a meal, you know? And so we put all those three things together. And we said, let's try to build a soup kitchen as if we're building a beautiful restaurant. When we finished the renovations with so much help from so many people, you know, Politecnico of Milan, 13 designers who designed the different tables, other designers who were involved in the renovation of the space, we called on artists to come in there. So there was so much synergy going on in addition to the over 100 chefs that came to cook with us. That space was more beautiful than Osteria Francescana. And I would say to people, I want to move my restaurant here. But if it wasn't more beautiful than Osteria Francescana, we would have been hypocritical in our claims of what we were trying to do. Italy has incredible services for people in need, whether it's looking for housing, whether it's helping immigrants find jobs, giving out meals. But no one had ever thought of doing it in that way. No one had ever thought of taking it to that next level. And we all felt like Expo was an opportunity to bring things to the next level and to create new models.
So how big is food scarcity an issue in Italy, Laura?
This project wasn't specific to Italy. We created in Italy because Expo was in Italy, but we didn't create it because we saw terrible food stats in Italy. Italy is a country that wastes food like many first world countries do. And most of that waste happens, surprisingly, not in industry, not on the farms, not even in the supermarkets, but in our homes. That's where most of the food waste is happening. But basically, you know, there are incredible numbers out there. A third of the food production is wasted around the world for whatever reason. Sometimes it's food loss. Sometimes it's food that's being not, you know, stored properly or taken off shelves and thrown out. In certain countries around the world, it's easier to burn food, take it off the shelves and burn it. It's cheaper and more cost effective than to actually bring it to a food bank or donate it to a soup kitchen. But we are, you know, creating food for twice the amount of people that we need to. And yet we have so many people who are still out there who are food insecure. But I think that the most important thing is we realize that Food for Soul was not only a platform and a refectorio to be able to give a meal to someone in need, but also a teaching platform for people to understand how to cook better at home and waste less food.
If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. If mountains crumble to the sea, there would still be me.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Laura Gilmore. She is a partner in life and business with Massimo Battura, their restaurants Austria Francescana, among others, and she's the co-founder and president of Food for Soul. So, Laura, we really haven't dived into the food waste element of Food for Soul, how you are able to get food that otherwise would be wasted and turn it into delicious meals for the needy.
Right. So beginning with Expo, we formed partnerships with different supermarkets around the city of Milan and different people who are selling food in Expo. And we never work with cooked food. We only work with raw ingredients. And basically, we set up a network where they could bring their surplus food to our refettorio. And that is a model that we have recreated wherever we've gone after opening in 2015 in Milan. 2016, we had an invitation to come to Rio and open a project in Rio. And once again, we established direct lines with food providers, supermarkets, bodegas, farmers markets. Whoever wanted to donate food rather than burning it or throwing it away could donate it to Food for Soul, to our refettorio in Rio, Refettorio Gastromotiva. And then another one, 2017, Refettorio Felix in London. And then 2018, Refettorio Paris in the Church of the Madeleine, and so forth and so on. And every single project is unique because of the unique community that surrounds it and the need in that community. And every partner that we work with is a little bit different.
Could you explain like a typical partnership and how that might work? I imagine it varies quite a bit, but I'm interested in the nuts and bolts and how that can unfold.
So the we're based in Modena, Italy, and we can't be everywhere around the world. So we set up a model and we set up a way to build and construct and apply our methods and our values. And then we partner with local partners. So our partner in Rio de Janeiro is Gastromotiva, and they are a beautiful reality who are offering culinary programs, teaching programs to people who otherwise would not be able to frequent a culinary school as a way of getting out of the favelas, as a way of addressing a need in the industry. And they partnered with us so that our refettorio project in Rio is not just serving the community of Lapa, where it is located, with a capacity of serving 100 meals an evening, but during the day, there's a culinary program teaching people how to cook and moving them on into the restaurant industry. In London, we have a completely different partner. We have partnered with St. Cuberts, which has been offering for 25 years a lunch service to rough sleepers and people who are homeless adults in London, and not only offering them a lunch service, but laundry services and shower and help with jobs, applications, and things like that, and counseling. You know, we have other partners inside the Church of the Madeleine, and that project was led by an artist named JR, and also an incredible travel agency called Voyage du Monde, who wanted to give back and wanted to give back to the city of Paris. And together we worked to create a project there. Today we are working on actively a project in San Francisco. I know you're based in San Francisco. And San Francisco is an incredible example of working with a partner called Farming Hope. And Farming Hope has been working for the past couple of years in the San Francisco Bay Area to educate people who are interested in the culinary arts, who maybe are in a transitional moment in their lives, or looking for a job opportunity, looking for a way to survive in life. And so we've put together teaching culinary skills with creating meals for people in need. And right now we're still looking for a home in San Francisco, but in the meantime, I've been working out of an ex-restaurant called Cora, which was a Mexican restaurant, and we have been creating meals, community meals that have been delivered and picked up, and an incredible amount of meals since November 2020.
And do you count on the partners generally to handle funding for the enormous outlay that it requires to feed all these people, or is this one of the pieces that Food for Soul brings to the table as well?
Well, we work hand in hand. We do a lot of fundraising at Food for Soul, and we have, ever since the pandemic, we created what we called a community fund and have been fundraising for the community fund, which offers support for all of our refettorios around the world, specifically in this moment when they had to pivot from housing guests and inviting them into a dining space, but to pivot into delivery and having people pick up their food. And so all the expenses that went into packaging food and creating safe environments to work during this time of COVID and to be able to work when people needed food the most. And then we have specific fundraisers and fundraising campaigns individually run by our organizational partners inside every refettorio.
It seems like such a great idea, Laura, that shouldn't just be limited to your organization's limited bandwidth. Have you been able to convince any, or have you seen any uptake of a similar model in other parts of Italy or around the world where the refettorio model is being played out for the needy?
Well, I think we've had a big influence in the dialogue that goes around how we feed people. We don't feed thousands and thousands of people a day. We feed about 100 people a day, and we try to feed them with a certain kind of attention to detail and to communication and hospitality and building trust. And I think that that's really important.
Laura Gilmore, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. I love being on Sea Change Radio.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Italian music pop band Jerry Vale and Chris Cornell.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.